prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, this is a Facebook Live with Tim Bruce and I, so feel free to ask questions. If you post your questions on Facebook, we will actually see them. We will put your question up on the screen, so you will be momentarily famous amongst 12 people. and then, hey, you know what? Who knows what will happen? But anyway, I got a lot to talk about. This is kind of like a casual Friday without Elisa, sadly, but Tim is going to fill in.
Right.
Hey, Khalid Hamloui, man, it was just his birthday. Happy birthday, Khalid!
Wonderful. Hey, happy birthday, brother.
Khalid is probably the smartest guy in his hometown. I'm trying to think where Khalid lives. He lives in not Morocco. Where do you live, Khalid? Where do you live? Post it on Facebook so we could talk about it. We reach a worldwide audience with Superhuman Radio. It's no joke.
Absolutely. I can testify. I mean, I get social media messages from people that listen to the show and want to comment and talk to me specifically about some of the ads we've ran and some of the products, sponsors we have. They're definitely not from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I know, right? Right. So I have so much to talk about. The first thing I want to talk about is he's in Algeria. There you go.
He's the smartest
guy in Algeria. I can guarantee you that. So I remember when Aaron Singerman insisted that I get an iPhone. We were doing off topic for Dave Palumbo at the time, and Aaron said, Carl, you got to get an iPhone, man. You know, and I still had like a little old flip phone at the time.
Right.
This is probably just 7 years ago, 8 years ago, quite frankly. Maybe, about 8 years ago. And so I didn't want an iPhone. But I did eventually give in, and I got an iPhone. And I got to be honest with you, the iPhone is more trouble than it's worth. It really is. I don't know if you do this, but I put off every single iOS update as long as I can because I know what's going to happen. As soon as I install that new iOS update, some app will stop working or something wonky will go on with my phone. So now I have to bring my phone into the Apple store. They have to physically fix it because my phone is the model number A1660, which all A1660 phones are incompatible with the latest version of iOS. So do you think that they change the software to accommodate the potentially millions of people who have an iPhone 7 that's of the version A1660. No, I have to bring my phone in so that they can solder something on it because my phone says no service or searching constantly now. Even if I could be under a cell tower.
Right, you're so close to a cell tower that there's no. I mean, and you have fantastic. You've got commercial grade Wi-Fi service. There, you check all the boxes why these things should work. I'm definitely not a cell phone technologist, in quotations, but I've been using this technology since it came out, like most of us. I was one of the early adopters. But this is ridiculous. Yo, what's up, John? How you doing, buddy?
John Peaks, man. He, no matter where he is in the country, we need to start doing a Where in the World is John Peaks. Remember Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Because you have young children that probably used to watch that.
Oh, absolutely.
We need to start doing a Where in the World is John Peaks because every time I do a Facebook Live, John is in another state picking up something. And I got to tell you about John. I met John a few years ago, because he's a over-the-road truck driver, he was having some issues with sleep. And now most over-the-road truck drivers would just ignore it. It's part of the job. But John was like, no, man, I train when I get to where I'm going. I got to have 100% of my energy when I get where I'm going. What can I do? At that time, he had a partner. I want to say his partner is actually his wife, believe it or not, but I'm not sure. I don't want to misspeak. So if I'm wrong about that, John, post it. But now he leverages blue blockers, melatonin. You know, he gets into his sleeper when he needs to get into a sleeper. He actually creates nighttime environment. So you know, it's an amazing thing, and he has gotten so much better. He feels better. His life is better, and he sticks to it, and he's a hard training dude. Look at this. Rick Pack is in Raleigh, North Carolina. There you go. Representing.
Shout out, buddy.
Representing.
Hope you're putting some miles in today, Rick. Get out there and run.
Rick is a very talented athlete, man. Very, very talented athlete.
Yeah,
the dude has got some serious running skills, man.
That's awesome. I need all the help I can get. I'm actually running a 5K tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. Now, 3 miles for anybody that runs is like a walk in the park.
Right.
But when you're an anti-runner like myself.
How much you weigh right now, Tim? Because you're a big guy. You're a big guy.
Yeah, I mean, my weight fluctuates from, I mean, I'm 5'9 with 3 pairs of socks on.
Right.
And my weight runs for anywhere from when I'm in really lean shape in the low 190s to all the way up to 215, 220.
Where are you right now, given that you're running tomorrow?
I'm right about 200, 202, and I should be lighter because my knees are yelling at me.
Do you know I weighed myself this morning? I'm now 222 pounds. Remember last time I posted a picture, I was 228.
Heck yeah, you did.
And I'm more muscular now than I was before. I will shirt off for my 60th birthday in June.
That's going to be a good show. We need to definitely talk about that and all the things you've been doing because, Carl, I'll be honest, for a guy who's 59 years old, you are training as hard as any 30-year-old in the gym in this country, yeah, period. I know people know it, and they hear you talk about it on the air. Carl Lenore trains hard.
But you know what the really interesting thing is? I want to give a shout-out to Kirkland Morletti because Kirkland is actually working with us. He will start booking guests for us very shortly.
Right.
And he's already getting me on other people's shows, which is part of the job that he's doing right now for us. But Kirkland is a machine, and he's a machine about his diet. He keeps meticulous records. The guy is fantastic. In fact, I'm going to let out a secret. In a couple months, a new brand will be born called Research Rebel. I have been taken under the wing of Dr. Jeff Galini. We are introducing some new exciting products. We will rebrand Thrive. And after we rebrand Thrive and we introduce Research Rebel, the brand, Kirkland Morletti is going to do an overfeeding experiment with Thrive.
I'm very excited to see the results of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I have my own thoughts. I don't even want to let them out in the air right now, but I have my own thoughts and expectations of what I foresee happening.
Look at this. Garrett says, awesome stuff. Tim, congrats. Do you know Garrett Anderson?
Thanks, brother. Garrett is a guy locally from my area here. Great dude.
Cool.
Great dude.
And thanks for watching today. So, what people don't know about me is this, and in fact, I wrote something I'm going to read a little bit later. I am challenged physically right now. I've got the foot that's on the mend, but it looks like I'm going to need a second surgery.
Oh.
Okay? The first surgery got the foot, like, back together. The second surgery will make the foot like it was new. Dr. Seeds warned me about this. He said he didn't think that it could be done in one surgery because I lived so long with the malformed foot. There was just so much scar tissue in there when they opened up the foot that now, in order to do this right, we're going to end up doing it in two stages. So I'm probably going to have another surgery, maybe the beginning of next year, maybe sooner. We'll just have to see. But anyway, I've got lumbar spine problems that are causing numbness in my legs. I have some sort of autoimmune disorder that's causing numbness in my feet and hands and my face. I've tracked it all down. I figured out what everything is. But the point is that I am not in the best physical place right now at 60 years old.
Right.
But I'm not allowing that to get in the way. I didn't want to go do cardio today. I just felt like, you know what? But I thought, no, you know, I have a goal. I have a goal to be as lean as possible by 60 years old. I'm thicker and more muscular than I've been in a very, very long time. Without 2 grams of test, a gram of Deca, 600 milligrams of Tren-Nth. You know what I mean?
Right.
When I was training my heaviest and lifting my heaviest, and I'm talking about going into the gym every single back day, every single leg day, every single chest and shoulder day and taking my body to dangerous levels of exercise from me, right? I'm not a professional. I'm not a elite powerlifter. I did that every single week in and week out for years. Today, I'm on 250 to 350 milligrams of testosterone a week, and that's it. Nothing
else. Right, you are on strictly health, basic health numbers right
now. Yeah, I want to live longer now. Now, I don't care about lifting more. I don't care who's watching me. I used to love deadlifting because the reward for deadlifting was letting that bar go on the platform and hearing that weight crash and everybody in the gym turning around and go, what the fuck was that?
Right? You literally feel like the ceiling.
King Kong. I felt like King Kong. Yeah. I felt like King Kong. But I'm not looking to be King Kong anymore. I'm looking to live a longer and stronger life, maintaining my strength and my size as I age. So I will be 60 in June. So we'll see. I'll take my shirt off in June and we'll see where I've gotten. But I've got a lot of obstacles I'm fighting against. I'm swimming upstream every single day, and I will not allow it to get me. I will not give into it.
Carl, that's why your story is so powerful. This is something that you and I talk about a little bit off air when you and I are just chatting. But people need to hear that. They need to know. Like, listen, we're all going to have obstacles, and it's going to happen daily, and it's going to happen weekly and monthly, and you're going to have years. If you've trained for 20 or more years, there is going to be years, 12-month blocks of time when progress will not move forward.
Right.
You won't be the physical version of the self you were a couple years prior. But can you get back? Yes. It's about, can you make it through? Can you survive? Can you push yourself past the days where you just go, okay, it's a scheduled training day. I've had too much to do with my kids, career, injuries like you're having. You have to decide, does this matter so much to me? Is this important to how I function as a human? And if it matters, like air, like getting quality of sleep, then you're going to find a time like you're doing. You're going to say, listen, I've got all of these maladies. I've got issues I'm fighting through, but I made it to the gym today. It didn't have to be a PR day. This is something I can tell you as a 43-year-old guy, which I am right now. I've been training since I was in high school. I was the proverbial 90-pound weakling. I hit some numbers that I'm told were pretty decent. You know, the what is Brooks Kubiak always said, throws out the 3-4-5. You know, the 300-pound flat bench, the 400-pound high bar squat, and the 500-pound conventional deadlift. You know, right. I did all that raw, natural, looking like I was going to break in half at times. But it's, can you keep training through all of these issues? Can you just keep your nose to the grindstone? And we're hearing about it. Carl, I mean, your message is getting through, buddy.
Well, so let me tell you what I wrote this morning. So I went in and I did my cardio, and it when you have numbness in your lower legs, you constantly think about it and worry about it, right? You think, oh, man, right, what is it? Like, I'm always trying to understand. And it definitely is my lumbar spine. There's no doubt about it. Because now that I got the boot off, I'm inverting again, and I can actually show you in inches the numbness has moved down. So I'm going to get really aggressive with some things for my lumbar spine in the next year. Okay. But it's in the front of my windshield all the time. It's like, man, what if I can't walk when I'm 65? What if I start losing the strength in my legs? And so I'm constantly pushing back on that. So this morning I was sitting in the sauna after my cardio, and I wrote this. It's a little long, but just endure it for a second. Aging and becoming old and frail are mutually exclusive. You can get older without becoming frail. I think of getting older as a balance between being optimistic about outcomes as it relates to injuries and allostatic loads and the probability of full recovery. When injuries and normal wear and tear produce the feeling that you'll never fully recover, you're now old, in my humble opinion. And I'm not going to read the rest of it, but I'm going to summarize where I'm going with this. When you're 26, 36, even 42, you break a leg, you tear a muscle, it's never in your mind, oh my God, I may not come back from this. But then there becomes a time, and the age isn't important, it's a mindset. When you get to a certain age where you think to yourself, man, what if I never get over this? What if the balance of my life, I'm haunted by this or by that? If you give into that, you are giving in to becoming old. Everyone ages. Everyone is going to age. If you're lucky, you're going to age. You're not going to die. But becoming old requires a couple things. It requires optimism. But in order to have optimism, you have to have options. Because when you're older, if you think, oh, I'm like every other old person, they've never recovered from this hip replacement or whatever, I'm not either, then you lose your optimism and you think, this is it. I'm old now. I just got to give into it. I'll be with a walker someday. I got to give into that. But as long as you have options, you have optimism. So what are the options we promote on the show? Intense training. It changes the trajectory of your health and your life. Peptides and hormones. Okay? Peptides and hormones are regenerative. They reverse the problem instead of just masking it. Focusing on better sleep, always improving your sleep. If you get your sleep back, you will get your health back. You'll get your recovery back. So those three things right there need to be focused on if you want to separate aging from getting old. I want to be 70 and 80 years old, still doing the things I'm doing today. And the only way I do that is to maintain optimistic that anything that happens to me, I will fully recover from, and that I will be able to continue to do the things I do. And in order to do that, you have to use technologies and knowledge that the average elderly person just turns their back on. They get old, they go, you know, I got to be in a wheelchair. I got to be in a wheelchair. That's all there is to it. I was really thinking about this morning. It's like, if I thought for a minute that this is the foot I have to live the next 30, 40 years with, I'd be very sad. If I thought for a minute that this numbness in my legs is something that I can't reverse, I would not be optimistic about the future. But I do believe I can reverse it. I do believe that foot can be better. I do believe that I can continue to repair and recover 100%. So I'm optimistic about the future, and hence, I'm not old. I'm just aging.
Damn right.
So,
cheers, brother. I have nothing to add to that. That was a brilliant soliloquy right there.
Yeah, look, Khalid says, if you let problems get in the way of training, then you will die early. And it's the truth.
We know it's true. All of us have been in the gym. We've been training for too many years combined as a group in this physical culture sphere. We've seen it. People that let things get in the way, that get too big, that stop training, that it no longer is a focal point in any part of their day-to-day life. We watch them age dramatically. Well, you see it when you see people retire.
Yeah. How many people you know that retire and 2 years later they die?
Oh, it's terrible. And part of the reason is exactly what you said. The optimism's gone because they had something to every single day get up and look forward to. Every day they knew what was structured in their life. And when they no longer had things that were a passionate hobby, let's say at a bare minimum.
Right.
It goes away. You know, their grandkids aren't enough. Their children aren't enough. Or if they don't have any of those, that's
hell,
not enough.
Grandkids just make you feel older. I'm so glad I don't have grandchildren right now. You have no idea. Well, I would just feel older.
I'll tell you what, man. I'm glad I am a young grandpa.
Yeah, you got.
I am a grandfather. Yeah, right. People don't know that. They ask me and they look at me and they say, "How is that even possible?" I said, "I'm good looking. I can't help it.
That's good. That's
no,
good.
I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old grandson, and they are. I cannot believe what they get into, how fast they run. I've got to stay in shape to keep up with them.
Yes.
I mean, I have a 10-year-old still at home. Well, I mean, my wife and I, we cover the spectrum, man. We've got kids that are married, going to college. I've got a 10-year-old I'm running a 5K with tomorrow. And we've got grandkids that were over last night that they have so much energy. Oh, I've got to say this to you. Speaking of grandkids, when you see children play and you see them move, you realize that that is how human beings were designed. Now, we get older and we sit behind desks. We drive trucks. We injure ourselves playing sports. But I just had a long conversation with an old client of mine who was giving me every reason why they can't squat. They can't do a proper hinge movement of any kind. And I asked them if they have grandkids. And, of course, their answer was yes. I said, go watch them play. No thoughts, no issues, perfect full squats. They squat. Everything works. They do perfect hinges, not always because they're little kids, but there's no thought behind it. Their body works the way it's designed. And I thought, wow, there's a beautiful example of if you continue to do something right over time, you just don't lose it. It doesn't just go away.
Right.
Like, I was playing catcher on my kid's baseball team. I ran behind home plate, no warm-ups, just ran behind home plate to warm up the pitchers.
Right.
Well, I'm squatting down in a full squat playing catcher. Now, I played it up a little bit for the parents that were behind us, but they're looking at me like, how did you just run over there and pull that off? You didn't warm up. You've been standing over there for an hour and a half.
Right.
We know you're in your 40s. You ran over there in a full squat. I'm amazed how many 40-year-olds can't squat.
Yeah.
Not because they had an injury, but because they just lacked.
They lost the ability. They just lost the ability because they don't do it. And that comes to an interesting discussion. A study was just published about work-related longevity.
Okay.
So, you know, we've promoted – I want to find it real quick. So, you know, we've promoted – here, high physical activity at work. Now, think about this for a second. Think about this in the context of what we talk about on the show, that staying active. And I've said on the air that the landscaper and the brick mason will live longer and be healthier than the guy who makes 10 times they make but sits in a desk for 12 hours a day. I mean, I've talked about that, right? So,
agreed.
High physical activity at work may increase death risk. So I looked at the study. This was a study that was just published. It was done using the guidelines from the World Health Organization and data from the World Health Organization.
Okay.
Adults age 18 to 64. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find the point that I want to make here. The physical paradox. Specifically, they explain, while beneficial health outcomes have been associated with high-level leisure time physical activity, right? Detrimental health consequences have been documented for high-level occupational physical activities regarding cardiovascular disorders, sickness, absence, and mortality. Now, think about what they didn't look at. This is what's wrong with epidemiology, right?
Right.
So what they did was they looked at guys who do the kind of jobs we're talking about. They're brick masons. They work physically throughout the day. They're manual laborers. They're blue collar. And they even point out that this group of people highly correlate with blue collar workers.
Okay.
What they don't talk about is what these guys do and gals when they're off the job.
Of course they don't. They conveniently.
Because you and I know what they. Yeah. So what does every landscaper do at the end of the day? Stops by, picks up a 12 pack of Bud.
100% they do.
Right. Russ Scala came on my show and talked about when he was ambulance. That after they would get done with a run, everybody, the cops, the firemen, they all went to the bar and they drank all night long, and then they went home and then they slept and then they got up and they did it again. So it's not the level of physical activity that's causing death in these people. It's what they're doing when they're done with their job and they're crapping on their lives and they're smoking cigarettes. But they don't talk about that. So if you were the mainstream media and you saw this, you'd go, oh man, I feel sorry for my landscaper. I feel sorry for my no. Don't feel sorry for them, because if they treated their job like an athlete treats an athletic performance, and they worked hard all day, but then they got their protein and their carbs, they protected their sleep, they'd actually become stronger and stronger. They wouldn't die. It's not
they
the
would
work.
Be the longest living people on the planet, especially in North America, they would be. We understand that. That's what I love about this superhuman nation is they're critical thinkers. Everyone thinks critically. Nobody who listens to this show on a regular basis believes studies and they read them at face value. The first thing they have, the first emotion we have is what? Is literally those words. It's what to believe. There's no way that's accurate. Because as soon as you read into the study and you go, oh, they look what they left out.
The most important thing. These guys are usually pounding down gobs and gobs of alcohol after work.
Right.
They smoke cigarettes. They who knows what other reckless behavior they participate in.
Right.
But they don't talk about that. They just talk about the fact that these guys work hard. Do you know a Nancy Bruce?
Uh, That's my mother. How you doing, Mom?
She's watching today. Good, good. Hey, you know what? That's good. She should support the show. There you go.
Hey, Nathan Heaney said hi, too.
And Nathan just won his first, I think it was his first, pro fight. Just like last week or something like that. Maybe it was a week ago. So
nice.
Proud,
Nathan,
man.
Send us a message.
And you know what? I can look at him and tell that he is a technically skilled fighter. He just, to me, he looks like somebody who really, really understands the technology and technique.
God, I love MMA. Yeah. Now, we're going to go down a rabbit hole and get off track, but man, there is something about mixed martial arts fighting that just hits.
I think he's a boxer. I think he's a boxer. I don't think he's MMA. I could be wrong. Nathan, please post up here. You box, right? You're not a mixed martial art
fighter. He's a pugilist. I like it. Yeah, boxing is another incredible sport.
Boxing is harder, believe it or not. If you tell somebody boxing is harder, they'll say, oh, how could it be harder? You're not getting choked out. You're not getting kicked in the face. Yeah, that doesn't mean it makes it easier. You have to slay a guy just with your punches. I mean, sure, you can roundhouse kick a guy in the forehead and he's down. Sure, you can choke a guy out that's still got enough gas and enough skill to kill you and he's out. But if it's just punch to punch, all you can do is punch the guy. That's a lot harder.
It's a different animal. It is.
It's a lot harder. Let's see here. It's like they do a study on white collar sitting. Yeah, right. Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
Rick, I agree with you 100%.
That's what it is. They want people because you know what? We've been talking about this on the show. If you work for UPS and FedEx and you work that night shift, your probability of getting colon cancer or some kind of cancer goes up enormously. If you're a guy like me who sits at a desk for 5-6 hours a day, you are actually shortening your life. They want us to feel better because they don't want us to abandon the workforce. So Nathan says, my third professional boxing fight, Carl, it was a big show on UK television. Wow.
Nathan, do us a favor and find anything. If you can find a video clip, post that in the chat.
Tag us. Tag us. I want to share that.
Yeah. We want to see that. We'll definitely add it to what we're trying to do here with the show.
And Nathan, wouldn't you agree with me that slaying a guy just with punches takes a lot more endurance and skill than kicking a guy, choking a guy, and punching a guy at the same time? I mean, one is a street fight and the other one is a skilled fight.
I know where you're going with this.
I love MMA. Don't get me wrong. I love MMA. I love watching it. It's amazing. Right. It's raw, animalistic. But boxing, that's why I could be wrong, but they call boxing the sweet science.
Yes, they
for
do.
For a reason. And,
yes. Yeah. I respectfully disagree, but I know where you're going with your thoughts. And I don't compare the two. They're just, to me, they're two different animals. They're in a ring, but that's about the only thing they have in common.
Right.
I mean, I've been a fan of I've been a fan of the UFC since UFC 1. I've watched every single one. My nephews and I watch every single one. We go crazy about every guy that's in the lineup and in and out. I'll give all of these guys credit. That I'm not doing any of it. I don't even pretend.
I don't want to get hit in the face.
I played sports my whole life. I mean, I've been in fist fights. I don't pretend to know how to fight. Are you kidding? I'm not getting in that ring for all the tea in China. There's no way it's happening.
So he says, okay, so Nathan says MMA is possibly the most skilled out of the sports, especially with BJJ, but boxing is pure art. I like that.
I agree exactly with what Nathan said.
So let me tell you why. Let me tell you why I'm partial to boxing.
Okay.
Because I've been around boxing since I was a wee tot.
You actually saw Joe Louis fight?
No, I met Joe Louis at the. No, you laugh. I shook Joe Louis's hand. Joe Louis used to be at Caesar's Palace.
Okay.
I moved there in 1981, end of 81, Joe Louis was still working as a ambassador for Caesar's Palace. He used to walk around the casino, take pictures with people. So I met Joe Louis, okay? But more importantly, my Uncle George had a camp in Upper Greenwood Lake, New Jersey.
Okay.
And Rocky Graziano was at my sister's christening, my sister Valerie's christening. All these guys, Whitey Bimstein, Rocky Graziano, Terry Young, All of these guys were actual people to me because they came around the house, they came around for the holidays, and I didn't know anything about boxing when I was a kid, but what happened was I was a big kid for my age, but my father used to say to me, you know, you're just a puppy, because with all my size, I didn't have the aggression. And so when kids in the, and I grew up in Bed-Stuy, which was a rough neighborhood, and so when kids would come to me and want to fight, I would back down because I was afraid. So my father signed me up for Police Athletic League in New York, was like camp for kids. He signed me up for PAL boxing. And I learned how to box, and I developed a lot of confidence in my ability to protect myself. And it really changed who I was. But prior to that, I had been around some of the greatest boxers in the world at that time. And they were just guys who came over for Christmas and were loud and boisterous and drank a lot and played pinochle with all the other guys. That's all they were. So,
Ryan, you're thinking this is everybody's house.
Yeah.
Everyone's house has guys that are literally pro boxers showing up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, especially, I mean, Graziano was still fighting at that time, and he was at my sister's christening. So that was like a big deal. When I realized who he was, and I actually have pictures of these guys. I have pictures, black and whites, from back home.
Oh, I got it. I have to see these. You need to crack these out for me.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's awesome, man.
So don't get that study. If you hear that study in mainstream media, don't interpret it as, because you work hard, you're going to die sooner. Actually, if you work hard, you'll live longer. That's the truth.
It is such counter nonsense. Right. I agree with what Rick Pack posted. You hear that, and as soon as you read the first headline, you go, that obviously is wrong. That's obviously wrong because we have enough years of physical culture to prove otherwise.
Yeah. Well, we don't even need that. All you need to do is look at evolutionary science and know that we are descendants of humans who did nothing but toil and work and play all day long.
Agreed.
I mean, that's what we have. Evolutionary selection pressures have rewarded us with the ability to, I mean, we can outrun most animals. I mean, a jaguar can run fast for a little while, but humans hunted through something called persistence hunting, where they actually would chase an animal
right
until the animal couldn't run anymore, and it would lay down, and then they would hit it with spears and kill it. I mean, so we're the longest distance animals on the planet. Don't ever misunderstand that. And there's a reason for that. It's because we have moved from morning to night for a million years, and now we sit from morning to night. So it's really a problem.
In front of blue LED screens until we literally decide to close our eyes at night, and we wonder why there's sleep problems in the world today.
Yeah.
It's madness to talk about sleep and talk. I seem to have this conversation once a week about sleep right now. And I think it's because you and I, honestly, and on the show, talk about it so often on how important it is that we've got to get better quality sleep. It affects absolutely everything we do. Hey, there's a product, no product placement today, but you and I are talking with a potential sponsor for the show. We're not making any money for this. I'm just going to tell you about a product. Carl, you've done a study about tape. You went through a whole thing about mouth taping.
This is a good segue because we're talking about breathing for a minute. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, breathing is so important.
I slept with a chin strap to keep my mouth closed so I wouldn't snore. But I was still breathing through my mouth a little bit, like that. Right. I started taping my mouth. It changed the quality of my sleep. I sleep deeper today. And you know where I learned that? I was at that Quest think tank. Okay. And there was a guy there from Scandinavia who talked about breathing in general. And one of the things he said was, when you start taping your mouth, you will never want to sleep without tape on your mouth again.
Right. It sounds insane. To hear it at first blush, when you mentioned it to me, you're like, guess what we're learning about? And I thought, come on, you're taping your mouth shut. Yeah, I could see if you had some jaw problem. I don't know what would cause you to do that. So when you first said it to me, I thought, this is madness. This is for sure one of these crazy things Carl's trying. This is a new tech gadget. It makes no sense. And as soon as we went into the science and started, because I've already been familiar with most of the audiences with Wim Hof. Wim Hof is a legend in breathing circles right now, talking about hyperoxygenating the blood, everything he does is with breathing and living longer and healthier.
Remember that hyperoxygenation. I want to talk about that. Go ahead.
Okay, we'll do. But yeah, this product I want to get out before I get sidetracked again, thinking about something else that pops into my head. This new product we just tried, company's called Somnifix. We're not making $1 from it. They're not even a current sponsor on the program. I tried them as somebody who thought this was crazy. But I know.
What did Tiffany say when she saw you tape your mouth before going to bed?
Her exact words were, "I'm not doing that. You look crazy." That's what she said to me. What are you doing now? You're sleeping. What's under your pillow? What's on the bed? What did you plug in? What new technology are
you
trying?
Dude, isn't it funny? Guys like you and me, like we people look at us like, oh, what's he doing now?
Right, why are you doing that? And I haven't done this yet, but I am going to wear these when I train.
Yes. I don't breathe through my mouth when I train. I never have. And that's something I learned from boxing, believe it or not.
Correct.
Okay. When I was a kid, I was breathing through my mouth, and I had the coach say, close your mouth. And he says, and every time I open my mouth, he'd give me a little tap on the back of the head. And I button it up. So I don't do it when I train.
I'm a terrible mouth breather because I've been dealing with sinus issues most of my adult life.
Yes.
So even when they're clear, which is most of the time now since I got healthy and did a lot of things on my own, I went, wait a minute. Why am I still breathing out my mouth when I sleep? I'm like, I have no idea other than it's a learned response. I've been doing it for so long now that I thought, okay, I need to try this. Well, I can tell you, like I told the owner of this product privately, I said, I'm sold. I'm sold. This isn't a sales pitch. Breathing through your nose at night, there is something definitely happening.
I'm going to tell you what it is. And Rick Pack wants, he's eager to hear about this. So Wim Hof may not be completely correct about some things.
I'm sure he's not.
All deference to his knowledge, because I don't know anything about Wim Hof other than whenever I talk about breathing, people tell me about Wim Hof and hyperventilation. They did an experiment that Ron Penna at Quest told me about when we were there for this think tank. They did an experiment with dogs where they hyperventilated them, and they got their blood ox up to 100%. And the dogs died. Now, that's counterintuitive, right? Because, wait a minute, why would they die? So,
that makes no sense. Right.
Well, here's what happens. Carbon dioxide helps to liberate oxygen from hemoglobin so that it's available for the body to use.
Okay.
If there is no carbon dioxide in your body, and oxygen utilization drops, even though the pulse oximeter shows you're 100%, oxygenation to tissue drops. In fact, Derek Trombetta, the gadget guy, who is a fireman, said about 4 years ago they changed the life-saving protocol. And he said, we don't even breathe into people's mouths anymore. We pump the chest because 99% of the time there is more than enough oxygen still in the lungs to keep the person alive. He says what they look for now is CO2. If a person's blood CO2 levels stay elevated, they keep trying to save them. Once CO2 levels disappear, that person is dead. What we're learning here, which is kind of contrary to Wim Hof, is that CO2 is not a waste product. It's actually a very important gas and plays a very important role on the delivery of oxygen and getting your acceptable threshold of CO2 up actually improves endurance, because CO2 feeds in a loop that increases anxiety. So when the body becomes more tolerant of higher levels of CO2, you're able to endure more. Okay? So with that being said, when you breathe through your nose, you are rebreathing residual CO2 that gets caught in the sinuses and in the airway. If you breathe through your mouth, you let it all go. So there's a process called turbination that happens in the nose. It happens in the noses of all animals, quite frankly. So when your nose turbinates, it does two things. It recycle CO2, and that CO2 actually sets up the ability for the blood to liberate oxygen and deliver to tissue. But it also then, through inspiration, it infuses nitric oxide into the air that you're breathing, and that has a dilatory effect on the alveoli, so they can scavenge more oxygen, mm-hmm. and they can scavenge more CO2 and bring it into the blood. So breathing through the nose is so, so critical for performance in general. I mean, show me any animal that breathes through their mouth. I had a dog that started breathing through his mouth, and he died about 3 weeks later. There's the truth of Shih Tzu.
It's almost as though it makes perfect sense. When you listen to the science and you look into it, even past the surface level, you go, well, of course, there has to be something added to this. There has to be more than just a waste product. The body's always working for a level of homeostasis. Nothing is wasted. You know, this organism we run around in, literally this living organism, figures out how to use everything to enhance life, to maintain, you know, to maintain balance also. So it can't be a pure waste product where it has no benefit.
No, the body doesn't do things like that. From evolution, we don't do things like that. Everything that we're equipped with is a reason for it. So there's a guy named Stephen Scott who I met at the event. And he has developed a product called Carbogen. And Carbogen is carbon dioxide infused air. And what he does with this, you can actually dial it up by percentages of CO2 that you want to breathe. Okay. And we experimented with it. What Carbogen does is what years of Buteyko do, but it does it in days and weeks. You can actually breathe carbon dioxide enriched air, and you got to be careful with this. This isn't something like, oh, I'm just going to get a CO2 tube and start breathing it in. It's got to be infused properly. It's got to have a specific ratio. It can't go over too high. But you start breathing it. The first thing you notice is your brain opens up. You have this sense of alertness, okay? And you actually start to feel warm. And while you're breathing it, you're fine. But as soon as you take it away, you go, because your body's trying to get the carbon dioxide out as quickly as possible because you keep raising the levels. But what happens by using the Carbogen device is your body starts to become comfortable with higher and higher levels of CO2, which does two things. It more efficiently liberates oxygen from the bloodstream. But more importantly, your ability to endure is partially controlled by your body's perception of the threshold of CO2. So when you start to push the CO2 threshold up, all of a sudden you find out where you could only ride a bike at that speed for 20 minutes, you can do it for an hour now. I'm waiting for the Carbogen device to be ready for resale, because I'm going to have him on the show because I want one of these units. And just if you're a guy like Rick who likes to run, he would just sit home with the Carbogen unit while watching TV for 20, 30 minutes a night. And all of a sudden he would feel like unbelievable in the next week or two when he runs. He'd be like, the level of perceived exertion and exhaustion just drops. You just don't feel like it's
fascinating. That is because it is basically the opposite of what was being sold since the beginning of other than small pockets of people that understood there was a benefit to CO2. They didn't have the science to back it, but it's almost the opposite. It's only been the word oxygen, 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 oxygen. How to hyperoxygenate the blood? How do you do all this? Here's a way to do it.
So I want to talk about this now because this is something that I wanted to segue into. So one of the things that I learned from a fellow named Anders, who's going to be on the show, he's like a breathing guru. One of the things I learned from him, while his methodology is different, what I did learn from him is that you can have as profound of an effect on your physiology as regular meditation if you learn how to breathe. Now, there's a lot of people out there who believe that deep breathing.
Lamaze class.
What's more important about the breathing is something that Rick Pack just picked up on. Regular breath holds. So if you think about, if you look at a giant gorilla or a tiger or a lion, when they're resting, they breathe in, they breathe out, and they pause. Because think about this. When you breathe in, you fire a portion of the nervous system responsible for getting stuff going. And when you breathe out, you're working too. You're physically working to exhale. It's only when you're done with that cycle and you stop breathing that your body is truly in neutral. I've discovered this myself. This isn't what Anders taught us. What Anders taught us was if you slow down your breathing, you change your physiology forever. As long as you start to slow down, and he talked about the numbers, you know, the average person breathes very rapidly and they have high blood pressure. When you learn to breathe slow, but I picked apart even more. I looked at a video of a great ape, and I looked at the way the ape breathed. And the ape breathed like this.
Not a care in the world.
But that pause. So when you're breathing, you're working. When you're not breathing, you're not working. If you're holding your breath, you're working. So really, the nervous system takes cues from your breathing. When you breathe in, your heart rate actually picks up. Boom, 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 boom. When you breathe out, your heart rate starts to slow down. But when you pause at the end, your heart rate relaxes. And if we started to focus on breathing this way, it's not about, we're not, everybody thinks of breathing as breathing in, breathing out. No, it's breathing in, breathing out, pause. Breathing in, breathing out, pause. And you start wherever you can. So in other words, if you feel like pausing for a second is too long and you feel like you're going to, then pause for half a second until you get comfortable with that. Your body will adjust. At the same time, you're increasing your carbon dioxide tolerance.
Right, and at that's some point, I was going to say the exact same statement.
Yes. So this is what I've discovered about breathing.
Interesting.
You can actually change your physiology. You can lower your blood pressure. You can change the way you handle stress, if you start to pay attention and return to the way we probably breathed a million years ago before the crop had to be taken in and the silos had to be filled and, you know, all these duties that we put on ourselves just right. to have the predictability of food.
Right.
Think about that. We probably breathed more like the great apes. We probably took a breath, exhaled it, and we paused for a second. We didn't think about it. It was you're either breathing or not breathing. So if you're inhaling, you're breathing. If you're exhaling, you're breathing. And if you're pausing, you're not breathing. And that's when the body relaxes. Not when you're holding your breath in, not when you're inhaling it, not when you're forcing it out, but when you're done with that work, you have a moment after that where you enjoy the oxygen you just took in. So that's my discovery.
I like it. This is such a hot topic right now, especially in the area of strength training and endurance training. It seems to be like the thing to talk about right now. It's everywhere. Everyone's looking for what are we missing? You know, what's been covered in the past 25 years that we can maybe roll some rocks over again and relook. What I keep finding is most of this already exists. It's almost as though we're not coming up with anything new anymore. You're just going back and going, oh, this information was out there. Nobody took the time to really validate it and explore it further. They just went, those people are nuts. What could they possibly know?
What we're learning is the harsh reality that humans are not smarter than nature and that humans cannot do better what evolution has already done. If anything, all we can do is foul things up by thinking we're smarter than nature and smarter than evolution. And so what's happening is a couple hundred years ago, we decided as humans that we could do anything we wanted. We could find better ways to feed babies. It's formula. We have better ways to keep people alive. It's medications.
Yes.
And now we're thanks to people like Dr. Daniel Lieberman, his book is fantastic. Every doctor should be forced to read The Story of the Human Body. It's the owner's manual. It's how we got to where we are today. And when you understand that, then you understand how some of these diseases occur. What we've done is we left on a journey to the horizon out there where we thought we were going to figure out how to control everything. We were going to have to figure out how to fix everything. And we've found ourselves back where we started going, oh, my God, it was this all along. a low stress lifestyle, going to sleep at night at the right time like you're supposed to, eating a diet more like our ancestors ate than all this processed magic food that we keep coming up with and stuff. It's like we've gone full circle to come back and go, we had it all along. Now we have to change our lives to reintegrate the simplicity back into it. Like the simplicity of learning how to breathe again. The simplicity of learning how to go to sleep when it gets dark out. The simplicity of being satisfied eating foods that don't have lots of sugar and lots of crap in them to make them more palatable. I mean, it's amazing.
The hyper palatability of food, of all these processed foodstuffs. Like, there was an entire book written about the Doritos flavoring, about hyper palatability, and how it just literally changed the game. You know, scientists came together and said, how do we make this food so appealing that no one can physically eat one? They have to eat
more.
A bag. And then after you eat a bag, you crave everything else you've been saying no to, because you made so many neurons in your brain fire that you are basically taking drugs. The way they used to think drugs work.
Right.
I just had this conversation this morning, actually, with a sister who's staying at my house right now for a day visiting. And we were talking about foodstuffs and how complicated everything is. Now, we get used to all the cutting edge information, looking at food as far as macros. What does organic really mean? How do you eat every day to be as healthy as you possibly can? We understand the nuances of keto, what versus paleo versus fasting. We could talk for 2 hours about fasting. It's kind of boring. Just don't eat. People make fasting too complicated.
I know.
Don't eat.
Just don't eat.
Here's my ebook right now on the air. Don't put food in your mouth. You're fasting. Ta-da!
Yeah, exactly.
We forget sometimes that the majority of people, especially our family and friends as well, and in this entire planet, don't understand how simple it is now. They hear, what am I supposed to eat for breakfast? Can I eat a banana? Can I eat a yogurt? What does coffee do? What does it mean to be dehydrated? Why do I get cramps from standing around too long working if you're a waitress or something? They get everything complicated and they want a fix instead of stepping back and going, okay, let's breathe some air, like we just talked about for the last 30 minutes. Let's make the majority of the food we consume have one ingredient, meaning it doesn't have a label printed out telling you the unbelievable amount of concoctions are in it. Just eat food with one ingredient. Move your body every day. Do something every day. Why? That's how human beings got here. We've already talked about it till we're blue in the face. And then if you have time, do some strength training. It doesn't have to be crazy. Get a stretch band. Get something simple.
Khalid is fasting, but I know Khalid is fasting, yeah. I think, because of Ramadan. I think Ramadan just started. So he's fasting for 16 hours.
And that's something we can go off on a tangent on if you want to, too. Fasting is, again, blowing up again all over social media. But just to finish my thought, that's how we have to remind ourselves, the majority of people close to you that aren't involved as heavily as we are don't understand at all what to eat, because the news is confusing every day, like we just talked about. If you know somebody that watches television on a regular basis and that's where they get their information, or they get it from random Facebook feeds from every guru trying to sell something to you, like how to fast.
Right.
Here's my new 16-part ebook series on how to fast.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's silly.
Sure what they're supposed to eat anymore. And it's kind of scary to think about it. They're afraid to eat salt. Can I have salt, or am I not supposed to eat salt? Well, if you don't take in salt, you'll die. So I think you should have salt. You know, they're confused on if they can have a banana. They really need someone to sit, like the members of the superhuman nation who listen to this show on a regular basis, to just take a breath once in a while and go, it'll be okay.
And you have to see that these are money-making opportunities in cottage industries. I'm not going to mention a name, but there's a guy who's known for keto, who, you know, posted something about don't eat a banana because there's 26 grams of sugar in it.
Come on.
We didn't get where we are today by eating keto. Our ancestors didn't eat keto. We just had Dr. Lauren Cordain on, the foremost authority on this topic.
He's the guy you want to listen to if you want to understand paleo, evolutionary eating, and what that means in the keto sphere. But please continue.
No, but I mean, our ancestors found themselves in ketosis because they couldn't find food. They didn't do it on purpose. They didn't go, oh, you know, when I'm in ketosis. No, they happened to be in ketosis because they didn't have food readily available. They didn't hunt the day before, whatever the case may be. It's wintertime and there's nothing to catch. They found themselves in ketosis. Ketosis wasn't a good thing. It was a way for the body to survive while it was doing what it needed to do for the good thing, which was to eat. So this notion that being in ketosis all the time is a good idea is bad because it actually sends signals to your body that say your environment sucks. You probably shouldn't have children, so we're going to shut all the sex hormones off because you can't feed yourself. How are you going to feed a baby? Okay.
Agreed.
And then on top of that, you're sending signals to your body that the only food that's available is this lesser option for your body. And so your body is going to start to shut down calorie expenditure. It's going to shut down resting energy requirements. It's going to, because don't forget, here's the telling tale, okay? You ask anybody who does the keto diet that understands it, Dr. Dominic D'Agostino, the people that are curing cancer with ketosis, right?
Yes.
They will always tell you that part of ketosis is being calorically restricted. In order for a brain cancer survivor to leverage ketosis to shrink that tumor, they have to be eating 500 calories a day less than their body really wants. So what does that tell you? That tells you that ketosis only ever worked when you weren't eating enough. This idea that, oh, I can eat 60 sticks of butter, my body's going to produce ketones, I'm going to miraculously lose body fat. We see the people out there who are going, I've been on the keto diet for 6 weeks, I've only lost 3 pounds. Well, you can't just eat everything and anything just because it's fat. If you're not in, and if you're not calorically restricted, it's not working.
Right. It makes perfect. You just go, of course that can't be good for you. I love bacon. I'm the biggest proponent of bacon you've ever seen in your life. You cannot just consume mass amounts of this product with no restrictions at all and expect long term to be a better physically functioning human being.
Right.
That is the epitome of health. Come on now. Let's get some semblance of let's get some critical thinking back and some sanity. Mm. People didn't become obese because they ate a banana.
You do realize that if critical thinking was popular in populations today, that none of these diet fads would ever spend a day in success. Because people would go, as soon as somebody says, this is it, this is the one thing that you need to do, I realize that they know nothing about physiology or they don't care. They just want to sell their product. I laugh now.
They're selling their personal client services and everything else. And in 3 years, they're gone, or 24 months, they're gone, or 18 months, they're gone. It seems like every 18 months, there's a new batch of crazies that show up on YouTube that blitz the internet now.
Bingo. Well, we just talked about this yesterday. It seems to me that if you want a big audience in America today, you have to say things that are more and more absurd.
Yeah. Starve yourself. Don't eat. Don't drink water. Don't consume anything until you're about to die.
In fact, there's a guy on the internet that's telling people, if you're overweight, you should fast until you're not overweight anymore. Now, think about that.
Yeah, right. Fast until, and not only just fast, he's recommend not drinking water.
Yeah, this is reckless. And see,
I don't even want to say the guy's name because I don't want to give him a plug.
No, but think about this. The more absurd and the more outlandish your dietary template is, the more people you will attract because they believe. And the reality is any diet will work if you do it long enough, except some stupid diets. I take that back.
Right. We understand anything inside a box that's bigger than your house.
Right. Right.
Will work if it has one main component to it. Slight reduction in calories, and then if you add a slight increase in physical activity. Now it's not that simplistic. We're not going to go into details, but we understand.
But it is to a great degree.
Yeah.
No, and I'll tell you why you're...
The majority of people overweight it is.
This is why you're right on.
Right.
Because the truth of the matter is, if you cut your calories 3 to 5... First of all, if you use a device like a breathing unit or you get a bomb calorimeter and you find out what your resting energy requirements are, and then you factor in exercise, and you determine for you to stay at the weight you're at right now, you need 2,200 to 2,500 calories a day. So you choose to eat 1,800 calories a day. If you do that by eating high protein, low carb, or you eat everything the same, if you get that 300 to 500 calories a day under your resting, under your total energy requirement, you will lose weight. But here's the problem why no one wants to do it. It takes time. You'll lose weight, but you have to be consistent. You can't do it for 2 days and get on the scale and go, I didn't lose a pound. This isn't working. No, you got to do it for 2 or 3 months and then go, oh, I'm down 3 pounds. That's how it really happens.
Exactly what you said, Carl, is what I've been repeating over and over and over again in messages. These people keep coming to me asking, you know, old clients of mine, people I have trained in the past, friends, family members, they want some secret because summer's here. They give me the secret. Give me something I can do right now. And I'm like, well, any, depending on what your goals are. But there isn't one. No, you can't have a cheat meal in the first week you start a diet. Why? Because you're breaking old habits. You need to stay on them consistently. This whole idea of cheating, in quotations, is a new thing with diet gurus that give themselves a little check mark next to their name on Twitter or Instagram that they've now found a secret. And I'll teach you how by, we're just going to track some simple macros. You can have ice cream sandwiches every week. You're going, okay, that won't work because the majority of people coming to you for the information already can't control what goes in their mouth.
Right. They're not going to have just one ice cream sandwich on their cheat day.
No, they're never going to. Their cheat meal turns into cheat day, and now it's Thursday, and it started Sunday.
Right.
And all of us that have been around the block 2 ways from Sunday have seen it. Yeah, the keto conversation I'm having on a regular basis, at first blush, I go, okay, information sound. It works. I've done it. You've done it. We know dozens of people who have watched the scale go up and down following versions of keto. But never once do I say, this is how you're supposed to eat for the rest of your life on the planet. Because we honestly, none of us know that answer. None of us know.
Well, and it's different for everybody, depending on where your ancestors originated. Right.
Right. We understand the purpose of glucose in the body. We understand ketones. We understand gluconeogenesis. We understand people who understand these topics and words and sentences and can make things sound amazing with writing skills, convince the rest of the planet that they have the secret.
Right. And just for the record, gluconeogenesis is a very metabolically expensive process for the body.
Right. It's difficult. It doesn't happen because you just consumed an extra steak.
Yes.
And then the zealots on the other side of the spectrum, exactly, Carl, try to convince you that, oh, if you just take in too much protein, boom, just like that, your
sugar.
Body converts it to glucose. No, it doesn't.
And here's the other thing, and I actually asked this to Dr. Cordain as well.
Right.
We talked about it. He said, yes, it's a very metabolically costly process for the body to make glucose out of amino acids.
Right.
He said, but more importantly, your body is not going to become hyperglycemic. It's not going to produce so much that you have an insulin spike to suppress it. It's going to produce just enough to keep the brain out of trouble.
Right.
So this idea that, oh, you know, I'm in ketosis, no, I can't have protein, it's just stupid. It is. And the people who are promoting this stuff, when you look at some of them, they're sick looking.
They don't
look healthy.
The diets they recommend either. There's a dirty secret in the nutrition industry, and I'm going to throw it out here because I know some people that make a living selling programs, and they got this amazing body and face while they're doing everything you expect them, kind of wink, wink, think they might be doing on the side, claiming they're these amazing, you know, all I did was follow my 17-week course on super keto, and I'm shredded with abs and legs. They also don't tell you the fact that they're on Winstrol, they're taking Anavar, which is fine. I don't care that they are. But don't convince people that you look like this.
Right.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're not using anything supplementary, wink, wink. and that you follow the crazy diet. You're telling the world through your Instagram pages you follow every day, 7 days a week.
Right.
They're not doing that, people. They're not.
Well, you saw the meme I put up about that guy. What's his name? Bob Harper, the personal trainer.
The guy who had a heart attack. And
yeah. Yeah. I said I put up a meme about him, and I said something like, hey, I'm Bob Harper, fitness and diet guru. Why did the broadcast just end?
Uh-oh. I see the questions just went away.
Well, that was it. I think it, Hold on a second. I don't get it. I don't understand why. It says broadcast just ended. I did open up Facebook on this other page. I wonder if that did it. Well, the radio people are still listening. So let me finish this thought, and we're coming to the end anyway. Okay, yeah, so the reality is that Bob Harper got a heart attack following his own advice. And people should be worried about that. And even though – and so he comes on these big pharma commercials now, and he goes, well, you know, I have a genetic predisposition. There's tests for that. You mean to tell me that you are the highest level of fitness and nutrition guru today in America?
Yep.
And you don't know about testing for certain genetic alleles that would make you prone to a diet not being good for you? So how are you teaching other people if you don't even know this stuff? I know it, and I'm not teaching anybody.
Right. It's all I agree with it, Carl. And we see this. The hypocrisy is so widespread. And in the fitness industry, we still live in the Wild West right now. It's absolute madness that people believe that everything they see on television is the truth. Follow it because they've got this great ad campaign. And then when you boil it down, you find out they're being funded by the XYZ company. And that's why they repeat everything they say.
Anyway,
yeah, I wouldn't be so bold to trash Bob Harper because I don't know what caused his heart attack. But I find it a little bit crazy that this was a guy who followed a very low-fat diet and told the world
he was vegan. I heard that he was vegan for the last few years.
And he went and switched and made a vegan jump. He's been all over the map, and every time he's one of these guys that everything new he does is the answer.
Right,
and you
right.
Follow it too.
Right.
And he makes another giant chunk of money. And then when that doesn't work and he's like, I feel terrible, I need to switch.
Yeah, he's and like, then when he has a heart attack, now he's hawking meds for Big Pharma now. Now he's hawking meds for Big Pharma.
I don't care what anyone says. I'm just going to say it. You're not going to do a nationwide ad campaign and not get paid a large.
Of course, he's getting a lot of money. And he's and the guy is really a professional shill. Because you know what? If you're advising other people, you should be advising people, hey, before you follow this diet, you probably want to have these tests done and keep an eye on your you know, on plaque buildup. I mean, it's like, you mean to tell me that 90% of the people in this audience know that, but Bob Harper didn't know? I mean, it's just, you know what? The bottom line is this. Diet, exercise, and health have become a cottage industry that is trying to grow as fast as Big Pharma. And the reality is that the money is making people do things that are really not good for the public and say things that are not good for the public. We have to pull the plug. You believe that we've been on for over an hour?
No, I can literally, I feel like we just started the conversation. There's so much more we can talk about right now.
And so this was a completely commercial free episode of Facebook, Supremo Radio Facebook Live. How do you like that?
It was awesome.
So, all right, look, I appreciate you saving me today. We were supposed to have Jeff Miller on. Jeff Miller's going to be on next week, on the 25th, I should say. Jeff Miller is a guy that I've followed. 8 years ago, he started powerlifting. His squat is over 1,000 pounds. His deadlift is over 800 pounds. His bench is over 500 pounds.
My lord, he's a forklift.
And you know what? No, but the guy, he's a pharmaceutical sales rep. He travels constantly. If he can do it, who can't, right? But the guy really displays that I want to talk about when I have him on the air is what we just talked about a second ago, consistency. You know what?
Right on.
Nobody's willing to be consistent. Then they complain that they don't have the results that they want.
So. Absolutely. That covers everything, Carl. That's the entire conversation we had today.
There you go. Hey, right, Tim, thanks for being on today with me, brother.
All right, brother. It was awesome. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
All right. Talk to you later. All right. And we'll see everybody Monday with more Supreme Radio.